The next morning, there was coffee waiting for him, a gun in a million pieces on his kitchen table. Both were Shepherd's doing. Morning! Like it wasn't 6 fucking a.m. Like the ambrosial scent of caffeine hadn't combined with his body's litany of complaints to finally drag Rodney awake. If the sun's not up, it's not morning, he croaked, groping for the coffee machine, half intending to drink the stuff straight from the carafe. Shepherd got in his way and put a steaming mug in his hands. Sorry, I'm not... Time zones and sunlight don't mean much to my internal clock. Rodney was in the t-shirt and sweats he'd slept in. Shepherd was dressed. Unfair. This bother you? Shepherd returned to his spot at the table and started expertly, wielding a miniature brush. It's another unshakable habit of a lifetime. No, Rodney decided, offering further. I have a gun. Okay, Shepherd did not have to look at the piece he was scrubbing. He knew it well enough by touch. It was unnerving. Shotgun in the front closet. I saw it. Found it while you were snooping around yesterday, you mean? Rodney should have been upset by the revelation, except he knew he'd have done the same thing in John's place. I've never fired it, he defended, suddenly wanting to distance himself from Shepherd's familiarity with firearms. My neighbors gave it to me when I moved in. Apparently, I'm supposed to use it if a rabid moose ever tries to kick in my front door. Two of the little pieces slid together with a click, also guided by touch. But you know how to, right? Yes. Honesty got the better of him. In theory. Which was just shy of admitting that most of his experience with weapons had come from first-person shooters. If I had to, I could always look up a manual online. One of Shepherd's eyebrows crept up in a dangerous fashion, while the rest of his gun pulled neatly together. He tested the action, then, satisfied, wrapped it in the cleaning rag before pocketing it. Perfect. I was wondering what trouble we could get into today. Rodney choked on a mouthful of coffee. Oh, no, you can't be serious. The Air Force takes combat arms training and maintenance very seriously, Shepherd assured him, expression perfectly bland. He would have pulled it off, too, if not for the alarming glint of mischief behind warm green eyes. But I'm not... Oh, God, I am so fucked. He acknowledged it for the first time while it was still an inkling, long before it became the lesson he would learn to his detriment, to the core. Rodney was incapable of refusing John Shepherd much of anything, whereas John Shepherd was the sort of man who was capable of asking Rodney to follow him into hell. Target practice in the woods wasn't hell, in Rodney's opinion, merely in the neighborhood. They set out late morning with two guns, Shepherd's standard issue M9, along with Rodney's battered second-hand shotgun, which Shepherd had identified as an M12, something of a classic. A stack of homemade targets and safety equipment purloined from the helicopter. Rodney had almost argued that Shepherd had planned this all along. The way equipment kept unexpectedly appearing out of the helicopter, except it made sense, even to a civilian, that the chopper crew, if he was going to be hanging out with a pilot, he should remember to call it a chopper, might need hearing and eye protection, so he gamely looped the drab olive headset around his neck. Shepard was in his damn aviators again. Rodney didn't know if they were supposed to be shatter-resistant or if he just wanted to look cool. Rodney didn't look cool. Coerced into wearing the hideous orange fleece jacket that had been a retirement gift from Zelenka. Even the color nearly gave him an allergic reaction. But Shepard had insisted, smirking and quoting regulations about safety and visibility, and hell, what the hell was one more blow to Rodney's dignity after he caught John Shepard digging through his coat closet? In addition to the fleece, the bastard had unearthed a box of shotgun shells Rodney hadn't known existed, so complaints about the invasion of privacy had been summarily dismissed. "This looks good," John declared, squatting at the tree line to inspect an old stump. "Any houses or anything in that direction?" "Maybe a kilometer from here. I own all the land between." It sounded like a lot until one recalled that it was all trees and rocks and hillside, not useful for anything but clear cutting. Nodding, Shepard dropped the target, counted back 10 paces, then settled into explaining the finer points of firearm handling with patience that, frankly, Rodney didn't deserve. They started with the Beretta, which was somewhat less intimidating. Shepard interrupted the lesson frequently to ask if Rodney was following. Every time, Rodney had to rip his attention away from the deft motions of Shepard's hands on the gun to assure him that, yes, he was. Okay, no, he'd missed that part entirely. Would Shepard mind repeating it again, please? Thank God. Thank God Shepard didn't adjust Rodney's posture by pulling their bodies in close, like it always happened in the movies. Rodney's nerves were stretched thin enough without Shepard murmuring encouragement against his ear, perhaps nudging a knee between Rodney's leg to correct his stance. "Rodney? You okay, buddy?" "Shit, sorry. Could you show me that again?" After an hour, he was judged safe with live ammunition. Safe, he gathered, meant that he was unlikely to shoot himself in the foot, because he was timid as hell every time he pulled the trigger. The recoil startled him, even though he steeled himself for it, and he couldn't hit the target for shit. Shepard's turn with the Beretta left tiny clusters of holes in the paper, and even Rodney was aware that his ignorance with marksmanship left him less impressed than he should have been. And he was really damned impressed. Handling the shotgun was easier once Rodney started imagining that the target was a zombie that wanted to eat his juicy, oversized brain. He was so delighted when he managed to put a spray of pellets more or less where he intended that Shepard had to move them back another 10 paces, pulled the shotgun against his shoulder, and matched Rodney's performance with his eyes closed. He even took off the aviators first, so Rodney would know he wasn't cheating. And so what if Shepard was a smug show-off bastard? So what if they spent half an hour picking shells out of the weeds and returned to the house reeking of gunpowder? So what if Rodney had come precariously close on several occasions to making inappropriate passes at a man who probably didn't need the loaded gun in his hand to end Rodney's life in under 5 seconds? It was seriously the best day that Rodney could recall in recent memory. Rodney managed to hold out until 7 o'clock, despite the tempting aroma wafting from the coffee maker. Shepard announced over breakfast, his cooking surprisingly edible, that he wanted to see Rodney's big dish.
Rodney's response was to attempt to exhale coffee through his nose. Oh, right, the satellite dish, he managed after he finished choking. Sure, why not? So they spent the morning crawling over Rodney's roof. He attempted to extend John the same patience that John had extended him the previous day. But it was difficult, so difficult, to keep the discussion to the level of a layman's understanding when Shepard kept asking such insightful questions. The first time might have been an accident, the second a fluke, but the third time it happened, he let himself go, expounding the technical benefits and drawbacks of his particular type of motorized mount until Shepard's eyes began to look a little glassy. That probably shouldn't have been as vindicating as it was. So basically what you're saying is that you press a few buttons downstairs and this bad boy up here does all the work? Rodney knew a declaration of defeat when he heard one. That's a vast simplification of the... Okay, basically, yes, he agreed. I can show you the control system later. Shepard might have groaned, or it might have been a gust of wind catching the dish. Rodney gave it a critical once-over. There was no telling how badly it had been knocked out of alignment by the landing chopper. Not to mention, it had gone far too long without a decent cleaning. And hey, what a coincidence! The day was mild, and he had an extra pair of hands at his disposal. Yes. Yes, this could work. Stay here, he told Shepard, and don't freak out when the dish starts to move. You can help me with something. There'll never be a better time for it, considering I have to recalibrate the damn thing anyway. Okay, Shepard said, warily shifting to a safe distance. The motorized mount made as much racket as Rodney remembered. He would have given a lot to see Shepard's face when the thing rumbled to life. And maybe it had been a little evil to leave him out on the roof like that. Rodney would contritely take the bitching that he was due. But it wasn't as if it was unsafe. Or so he thought. When Rodney pulled himself back up the ladder over the crest of the roof, the first thing his eyes fell upon was a black-clad figure stretched flat on its back. Oh my God, Shepard! He crossed the distance, mostly on his knees, because he was already there from scrambling onto the roof, and it was easier than rising. Please don't be dead, thought. What kind of idiot stands beneath a moving satellite dish? To be the next thing out of his mouth. Thankfully, he got out neither, because that was when John propped himself up on an elbow and squinted at Rodney. He didn't look dead, or hurt, actually. More like, bemused. Problem? He asked, gifting Rodney with a slow, knowing smile. Rodney tried to channel some of his panic into outrage, with very limited success, considering what he really wanted to do was kiss John in relief. No, yes, what are you doing? Shepard reclined again, lacing his fingers behind his head. Sunbathing. On my roof. In your clothes. When that failed to elicit a reaction, Rodney rallied. It's like 15 degrees out! What's that translated into Fahrenheit? If the tactic was intended to distract Rodney and pull him up short, it worked. He considered, I don't know, 60-ish? Beautiful weather for it, Shepard agreed. Then, perhaps an apology or perhaps something more significant. It feels damn good to have the sun on my face. I never get used to it, being cut off from the sky. Rodney sat down, hard, on his ass. And just stared. Eventually, Shepard grew annoyed enough to crack an eye and drawl, "You gonna join me or what?" Rodney would have liked to imagine that the satellite dish eventually got clean because he threatened to turn the pressure washer on John, on the most gentle setting, of course. The truth of it was, Shepherd's patch of sun had run out. It hadn't been large to begin with. When they stretched out side by side, their feet had never been in it at all. That evening, Rodney made good on his threat to introduce Shepherd to the intricacies of the rest of the system, past and present functions included. Shepherd doggedly stuck through it, pressing Rodney to continue whenever Rodney paused to apologize for having to be so, well, technical. But his tenacity didn't preclude the glassy-eyed look from surfacing during some of the longer expositions. The fourth time Rodney noticed it happening, he decided to rescue them both. He picked up the everything detector from where Shepherd had, in considerable display of trust, allowed it to remain since the experiments. "So, I was thinking," he began, and was gratified to watch Shepherd come alert pretty damn fast. "If I ripped the guts out of this and patched it into the telescope, I bet I could discover some pretty interesting stuff." No joke, he really had considered the possibility. The detector's sensitivity might even be able to handle the sheer deluge of data he tried to monitor. His programs, okay, they worked for the big stuff, but what it really amounted to was trying to filter out the subatomic particles with a chain link fence. And surely, even Shepherd would appreciate the irony of using an alien device to search for evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence. "I bet you could," Shepherd replied, lifting the detector out of Rodney's hands. "I'm confident I could put it back together again when I was done," Rodney assured, just to be evil. "Well, reasonably confident." Shepherd pulled the detector closer to his chest. "I don't..." He licked his lips. The first time Rodney could recall seeing him nervous. "Don't think that's such a good idea," Rodney said breezily. "You're probably right. I mean, the components could be toxic or radioactive or worse. Still," he relented, "the technology is incredible. Maybe you can't appreciate it? I guess nothing rates above pretty cool once you've piloted a spaceship, but trust me, it's really impressive." Catching on at last, Shepherd threw him a perfunctory glare. "If it was really cool, it would play Pong." Rodney had to admit, Shepherd had totally won that one. Flawless victory, even. He retaliated the next day by secretly programming his own version of Pong, complete with a stick figure quality head that was supposed to be Shepherd's. You could tell by the crazy hair. In place of the bouncing dot, he installed it on his third best laptop and gave it to John, and was rewarded by a burst of genuine laughter. Point to Rodney. Then Rodney had to worry about surviving the escalation of hostilities when Shepherd asked, "Does this thing have internet?" and retreated to the couch so Rodney couldn't see the devious things he was doing on the screen. Shepherd had no misgivings about fighting on Rodney's turf. The next day, an unusual thing happened. A vehicle approached Rodney's house. All the way up his driveway, past the damn chopper, right to his front door, where it deposited a man wearing a brown uniform. And while Rodney was still gripping his chest, trying to recover from the near-fatal heart attack induced by the unprecedented sound of his own doorbell, Shepherd went to sign for his package. "UPS?" Rodney read the shipping label. "That was a UPS truck? Jesus, you could have warned me!" "And spoil the surprise?" Shepherd returned blandly. He dropped the package on the kitchen counter, produced a knife that looked like something off of a ninja's Christmas wish list from somewhere on his person, and began slicing it open with all due ceremony. "You had it overnighted, didn't you? And you, oh my God, you use your name, your real name to deliver a package to my house. Are you insane? A last flourish of the wicked little knife had opened the box. Relax, Rodney. Obi-Wan Kenobi gets catalogs delivered here, and he's dead and imaginary.
You read my junk mail?
Rodney squealed, and seriously, those catalogs were addressed to Ben Kenobi, a name practically innocuous to a non-geek. Shepard was good. Your email was password protected. Shepard shrugged. God help him. Even staring straight at the man, Rodney couldn't tell if he was serious or not. Shepard leaned against the counter, crossing his ankles, and dangled a retail box in front of Rodney. Have this yet? It was the latest in a series of loathsome American football games. Of course, Rodney didn't have it. The filth wasn't welcome in his home. And of course, Shepard knew that he didn't have it because Shepard had purchased the correct version for the game console Rodney owned, which meant that at some point, Shepard had browsed Rodney's collection. But admiring that he knew that Shepard knew would have put him even further behind in the points game, so he just sniffed, "No," with as much disdain as he could muster. Great. At least he put the knife away before giving Rodney one of those weirdly acceptable backhanded slaps across the chest. You're gonna love it.
I'm learning to dread hearing you say that.
Rodney whimpered, nevertheless allowing himself to be dragged to the living room. The football game was just as hopelessly stupid as Rodney had feared, right up until he figured out how to work the statistics to build a team that won, no matter how badly he mismanaged it. Shepard pouted and piled him with beers, perhaps hoping that Rodney's aptitude for cheating, his words, not Rodney's, would degrade. It didn't, but Rodney was feeling downright affectionate towards John Shepard. Hell, he could even man up to it and admit it, privately, that the football game rated just as high on the unexpected success meter as the target practice had. So he started to let John win again. John had the ingratitude to accuse Rodney of doing it on purpose. That was pretty much the end of football, but they'd only begun to delve into Rodney's video game collection. A true geek knew that replay value was directly proportional to sentimental value, and the older the console, the less likely it was to be touchy and decide not to work just because you left it in a closet for a few years. Rodney won an unspecified amount when he let Shepard blindfold him, a real professional job, not even a silver of light got through, and beat the first level of Super Mario Brothers.
How did you do that?
He wanted to ask the same about the blindfold. Shepard had used a necktie, for God's sake. Rodney pushed it up to see again. The tail dangled over his temple.
I can still hear. The game board never changes. The monsters and obstacles are always in the same place. I just translated the visual cues to audio and timed the keypad inputs to the music.
Shepard shook his head and pressed.
Oh, please, I'm sure you learned stuff just as useful in college.
John clinked his beer against Rodney's. Someone tried to teach me to open bottles with my teeth, but, you know, I like my teeth. A smile flashed right before he took a drink. Rodney's stomach did a woozy little flip that had nothing to do with the alcohol. The other benefit of working their way down through the console generations was that each successive controller had fewer buttons to deal with. By the time the Atari made an appearance, a single button was just about right for Rodney's impaired hand-eye coordination. They settled on combat as the ultimate level of playing field on which to unleash their competitive instincts. The game responded so slowly that Shepard's superior reflexes lost their advantage. And while Rodney had always considered himself a master at ricocheting kill shots, Shepard proved equally adept at calculating trajectories. The mild intoxication of the combatants merely meant that it took longer than usual to acquire a target lock. John stopped announcing, "Fire in the hole!" when he shot, once he realized that it served as a warning for Rodney to move his tank out of danger, which allowed Rodney to stop cracking up every time he imagined Shepard accidentally slipping that phrase into his bedroom repertoire. Eyes closed, head thrown back, near climax. Fire in the hole indeed. Days bled into a week, threatened to stretch into two. Rodney's back only dimly recalled the comfort of his orthopedic mattress. It was, he pinpointed at last, akin to the homesickness he felt when he left his family and Canada for the university in the States. His first night in the dorm, it had been an all-encompassing ache. By the second night, it had been utterly eclipsed by the interesting things happening around him, to him. Shepard had that same effect on him. The damn man thought he was on vacation. There was no other explanation for it. Every day he had some new infantile plan to distract Rodney. The movie marathon, during which pants were declared an anathema. The Scrabble game they'd set to expert mode by removing half the vowels. The lesson on the proper way to short-sheet a bed. Rodney couldn't not get swept up with that sort of boundless enthusiasm, but as they knocked items off of Shepard's things to do if I make it out of the woods alive list, Rodney's own list of impossible questions grew and grew. He could no longer remember which he avoided out of apprehension, and which because they dealt with the certainty of Shepard flying away, leaving his peaceful little existence in tatters. There wasn't a reasonable distinction between them anymore. Christ, it was worse than that. Since when had staying out of prison became a lesser worry than never again hearing the soft, almost three-syllable way Shepard had of saying his name in the stillness of pre-dawn, when talking felt too loud? You have to go back eventually. What am I supposed to do then? Rodney thought hard at the back of Shepard's head. Shepard didn't bother turning to say, I hope you like your eggs scrambled, because that's what I'm making and that's what you're getting. Yeah, that was the way it was with John, craving something else but making do with what was offered. It beat starving. Your phone is ringing. Shepard was on the sofa, leafing through the now horribly overdue copy of War and Peace. He flipped the entire book upside down for a moment, as if that might help make it make more sense, or be less boring. Rodney pointed at his ears. These work, you know. Then went back to the email he was drafting for Zelenka, explaining why he'd been incommunicado for so long. He kept returning to the second paragraph, struggling to achieve the right pity-inducing tone. Aren't you going to answer it? Could be important. The only people who ever call here are telemarketers and recruiters who managed to bribe someone at my old office into giving out my new contact information. Everyone important has my email address. The ringing cut out when the answering machine picked it up. Rodney hadn't altered the generic, computerized, please leave a message prompt, because anonymity was always safest. And, okay, he didn't really know how. He'd thrown out the instruction manual before realizing that even his genius intellect could be stumped by the world's most user-hostile electronic convenience. After a beep, a familiar voice hailed from the speaker. Dr. McKay! Hey, it's Steve! Steve? Shepherd mouthed, eyebrows doing something exaggerated and inquisitive. Rodney's jaw dropped open. What? No! He gestured silently with both hands. It didn't matter what tone Steve was using. There was no way Shepherd could think like hell Rodney would ever. He'd only seriously considered it once, in a moment of supreme weakness that had been all Shepherd's fault. For starters, if they were an item, why the hell would Steve call him Dr. McKay? Unless Shepherd thought it was some kind of kink. Whoa, hold on a minute, calm down. Idiot, Shepherd wasn't even supposed to know he was into men. Steve kept blathering. Rodney seemed to have missed some of it because surely he hadn't just heard the word pilot. Had he? Had he? I mean, the whole town knows you got a helicopter in your front yard, and I'm pretty sure it's not yours because you never mentioned that you flew all those times I said I'd take you up. Anyways, what I was wanting to know was something, call it instinct, clairvoyance, whatever, made Rodney jerk his attention back to Shepherd. At the same time, Shepherd lifted his away from the answering machine. Their gazes met, locked, and Rodney swore he could read Shepherd's intent in the moment of weird, frozen clarity. They lunged in unison. Shepherd was faster. Hi, Steve, he cooed like a co-ed on the make, slapping Rodney's hands away from the phone. John Shepherd here. Rodney clutched his head and stared at the man in horror. What kind of idiot, working undercover for a top-secret government project, gave out his real name to strangers on the phone? Shepherd just rolled his eyes and turned his back on Rodney. No, I'm an old friend. Yeah, me and Rodney and science go way back. I had some time off. Thought I'd drop in for a visit. Well, if anyone's monopolizing anyone, I'd say it was the other way around. Rodney tried to sneak an arm around Shepherd and steal the phone back before more of his dignity suffered irreparable damage. But Shepherd's defense was a flawless offense. He casually shifted back and stomped on Rodney's foot. Beauty, isn't it? Sure, I've got a pilot's license. This was so not happening. I can't believe you agreed to do this, Rodney muttered for about the 10th time in as many minutes. He jammed the car into park and cut the engine, but left the keys dangling in the ignition on the outside chance Shepherd might come to his senses. Furthermore, I don't recall agreeing to do this, he gestured rapidly between himself and the man in the passenger seat. You and I are not a package deal. Shepherd leaned over and snagged the keys, spun them once, caught them against his palm. We are today. Hey, give me those! Nope. The keys went into John's pocket, not one of those big loose ones on his thigh, where Rodney might have been willing to stick his hand in desperation. No, they went in the front, in a motion that was at once mesmerizing and frustrating. Those keys were as good as lost until Shepherd decided to shimmy them back out again. He knew it, too. He flashed Rodney one of his cherubic smiles of impending doom and climbed out of the car. Damn it! Rodney followed, slamming his door behind him. Shepherd made a great show of flipping open his aviators and sliding them on. Apparently, they were past the stage in their relationship where he felt the need to coax Rodney into participating in his idiotic schemes. Hell, he hadn't even threatened that Rodney was going to enjoy himself. It was implicit in the smile. Rodney caught up to where he stood surveying the little airstrip. So, what? Am I a sure thing now? You didn't even ask me. You just committed us both. Yeah, Rodney. You're like that girl in high school everyone wanted to take to the prom because she was guaranteed to put out. Shepherd snorted. Except, oh, wait. I bet she didn't complain the whole night. Rodney leveled a finger at him. You admit that you think I'm easy. Of course, Rodney was easy. He couldn't even despise himself for knowing that the right words, hell, the right expression, would have him instantly on his knees with his face buried in John's crotch. No, the problem was that John was never going to ask. He was content using his unfair advantage to coerce Rodney into playing his goddamn sidekick. No comment. Shepherd sucked on his index finger, then stuck it in the air, pretending to test the wind. I'd say 10 miles an hour from the northeast. And I say you're insane. Doesn't this... He swept his arms wide, indicating the barely demarcated runway, the huddle of unimpressive buildings. Were you? You're supposed to be flying fancy things out of nice airports. I mean, Steve's idea of safety equipment is a 10-year-old fire extinguisher that was, at some point during its career, deemed ornamental and painted to match the walls. McKay. Two syllables, but teased out like a thread of cold, sweet molasses. I once landed an MC-130 on an unimproved mountainside in Afghanistan. Under fire. Trust me, I can handle a flat, grassy meadow. I wasn't insinuating that you couldn't, Rodney retreated. The story could be total bullshit designed to make him feel better, or, knowing John, it could be the deeply intriguing truth. He made a mental note about combat missions in war zones before switching tactics. Steve's nosy. He'll talk. We can't trust him. Shepherd strolled in the direction of the dilapidated aluminum shed, the one Rodney had to call by its correct name now that he hung out with pilots and was supposed to know the lingo. Hangar. That was it. I thought he was your friend. He is, sort of. He's just... Shepherd would understand soon enough. Just, did you have to wear those boots? Those pants? He'll never in a million years guess you're military with you being so subtle about it. Anyone who knows about the chopper has to know I'm military, he reasoned. It's kind of obvious. Trying to hide it would be even more obvious. So I'm going to treat this like any other flight and wear comfortable, sensible clothes. Yes, but... Rodney whimpered. He hurried up behind Shepherd and caught his elbow, pulling him up short. Believe me when I say he'll ask questions. We didn't even come up with a decent cover story. How long have we known each other? Where did we meet? Shepherd turned the tug into a spin, fetching up dangerously close against Rodney. And yeah, maybe Rodney still had his elbow in a loose grip. But it wasn't like Shepherd couldn't have broken free with no more force than a shrug. 15 years. You dated my sister in college. Rodney choked. Good point. I don't have a sister. Maybe he should make a grab for the car keys after all. Worst case scenario, his aim was off and he groped Shepherd's dick by mistake. Best case scenario, Shepherd didn't punch his lights out for it. I see what you're doing now, and for the record, it's not cute. Go ahead, insist on exposing yourself in public, but you can damn well listen to my misgivings first. After that, he was hanging Rodney's ass on the line just as certainly as he was his own. No, more. Shepard could rely on the support and protection of the Air Force, while Rodney had, well, his brain was admirable, but it was just as likely to drag him into trouble as pull him out of it. That left a rusty old shotgun and a cat who deflected to Shepard's side. She knew which human was punctual when it came to filling her food bowl, as the sum of Rodney's defenses. You better believe that if the situation turned ugly, there was only going to be one ass hanging naked and exposed, and that ass sure as hell wouldn't belong to John Son of a bitch, Rodney marveled. How do you do that? Do what? He still hadn't broken their contact, as if he'd rather make Rodney do it for him. What misgivings? Even when I'm aware of it, I still fall for the same dumb trick. You've made me run myself completely off topic, he accused, easing his hand off of Shepard's elbow. For some reason, the heteronormative spatial buffer didn't reassert itself between them. Neither man moved. So, Rodney licked his lips, unaccountably nervous. Pretend that I just made an eloquent, impassioned plea as per usual. We'll call it even. Forget the whole thing and go play upside-down Tetris instead. Upside-down Tetris had been the original plan for the day. Rodney still contended that inverting the monitor would be sufficient, but Shepard was stuck on the idea of hanging over the side of Rodney's bed, because apparently the rush of blood amassing in one's brain was, quote, half the fun. Hey. It was now Shepard who reached out and jogged Rodney's shoulder. Follow my lead and everything will be fine. I promise. Fine like busted ribs? And a concussion fine? Or fine like nobody goes to prison fine? Shepard released him then, but only to spin back around and fall in beside him. Close. Very close. Something about the way his elbow jutted made Rodney suspect that John had almost offered his arm. The deal-breaker had probably been Rodney's lack of breasts. As much as I enjoy standing around squabbling with you, I prefer to have daylight when I'm landing on unfamiliar terrain. Come on. John's momentum overcame the inertia of Rodney's objections. He found himself lulled into motion as surely as if John had been dragging him. Oh, so that perfunctory nod to caution is supposed to appease me when you're determined to risk... That sentence, had Rodney been able to complete it, might have included phrases such as, one of the most brilliant minds of our generation, and flying death trap that should have been scraped for parts 20 years ago? That was when Steve, impatient with their progress, barreled out of the hangar to meet them. Dr. McKay! Mr. Shepard! Shepard, God help him, didn't know any better when he greeted the interruption with an unwholesome display of gratitude. You must be Steve, he simpered. Call me John, please. Steve beamed, shaking the offered hand. He held the grip too long, released it with flagrant reluctance. Okay, John. No. Oh, no, he wouldn't. Shit. Of course he would. As much as it pained Rodney's ego to admit, Steve would hit on anything with a dick and a pulse. Not to discount Shepard's other assets, which were considerable. And while Steve must have outweighed the shorter Shepard by 20 kilograms, Shepard probably knew a dozen ways to kill a man using just his thumbs. I should have warned Shepard. No, I should have warned Steve. Or better still, I should have detoured over a cliff on the way to the airport in a spectacular murder-suicide, thereby preventing the situation from developing in the first place. Hindsight was a real bitch. They stood in the combustible little triangle, Steve too close to Shepard, and Shepard too close to Rodney, until Rodney cleared his throat loudly. Ahem. Come on inside and meet her. Steve motioned them forward, probably hoping to hang back and get a good look at Shepard's ass. Like Rodney was going to allow that to happen. When John nodded and moved off, he drifted back as well, and pinned Steve with the most threatening, testicle shivering glare. Steve's smile faded, and he glanced around as if trying to figure out how he managed to intercept a death threat that was obviously intended for some other target. You fucking moron! I'm trying to save your life! Rodney jerked his chin at Shepard, then pinned Steve again. He was in the middle of a finger-slicing, across-the-throat gesture when Shepard turned around to ask what kind of plane it was. He revised it into a contemplative scratch at his chin, like he missed a spot shaving. No way, Shepard bought it. Steve didn't get it. He shook his head, but at least had the sense to stop trying to convey his confusion in some sort of Paleolithic sign language. Cessna 180. Dr. McKay says she's rough around the edges, but I think of it as being broken in just right. His smile resurfaced once he started talking about his baby. Damn it, he'd better be thinking about the plane, and only the plane, and not Shepard in the plane. Shepard in the cockpit, slim hands caressing the instrumental panel, doing obscene things to the throttle. Ugh! How hadn't he realized sooner that this was just like porn for Steve? Shepard whistled. Nice. Very nice. You haven't even seen the thing, Rodney growled. The 1 stands for the remaining cylinder in the engine that still fires, and the 80 is for the percentage of the fuselage that has been replaced by duct tape. You'll have to forgive Rodney. He's got no appreciation for the classics. Trust Shepard to obliquely drag War and Peace into it. Rodney fumed in silence. Flown one before? It had to be a pilot thing. Shepard had stroked Steve with just the right touch. He was bursting with more pride than a mother cat presiding over a new litter of kittens. Closest I've come is a 206. Out of my league, Steve said. He stopped trying to scope out Shepard's ass, which should have been a relief, but was somehow worse than if he'd still been at it. Steve never gave up. He just modified the criteria he used to determine success. What else have you flown? It was the last part of the conversation that made sense to Rodney. Shepard started reciting an edited list of aircraft he'd conquered, which didn't include any spaceships, and which also sounded like the index to Auburn's Birds of America. Wow, I didn't realize the military was so hard up for imagination that they resorted to stealing the names of other flying things for their planes, he taunted, since they weren't going to hide the Air Force connection. Choppers, Steve defended immediately. His expression had gone soft and reverent. Rodney almost expected him to kneel and try to kiss Shepard's hand. Those are all helicopters, Dr. McKay. They moved into the hangar's dimness, where John was forced to either admit he was wearing his shades for looks or take them off. He did the latter, clipping them into the neck of his shirt. The weight was enough to make the fabric pull a little, completely not staring at the tuft of dark chest hair it exposed. Sometimes we just tape a bingo card on the wall and throw darts at it. There was a glint of silver around his neck, too. Was that? Oh, Christ. Dog tags. Rodney hated his life. Luckily, the remainder of it was going to be short. If the Cessna didn't kill him, Shepard surely would when Rodney's resolve snapped. Any minute now, he was going to peel up that snug black shirt and start licking the man from navel to nipples like a popsicle. Steve looked as if he intended to beat Rodney to the finish line. She's loaded, prepped, and ready for you, John. He swung the door open, and if you'd like to,
Thanks, Steve. Don't mind if I do.
Too late. Rodney saw what was happening, saw Shepard make the fatal mistake of turning his back on Steve. He reached up, caught a handhold, and pulled himself into the aircraft with a fluid practice hop. His ass was prominently on display for mere seconds before he twisted and settled in the seat. Unfortunately, those seconds were more than ample opportunity for Steve, who drifted near in anticipation, his hand stretched out. Rodney lunged. He might have shouted in the aftermath of the collision. He couldn't even recall how he crossed the distance so quickly. Both men wobbled, off balance, clutching each other as if drunk. Steve frowning and Rodney smirking in triumph.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry, Rodney lied.
He had his opening and made a wedge of his arms, worming forward until the gap between Steve and John was large enough to accommodate him. And if making himself into a fucking human shield wasn't brave enough, Rodney somehow found the courage to put his hand on John's thigh, high where the gesture couldn't be mistaken as even remotely friendly.
John, I just remembered, you should check the maintenance logs before we head off, you know, like we talked about in the car.
John just sort of stared down at him, green eyes wide, eyebrows heading into his hairline. Rodney let his fingers squeeze once. Shepard was already going to cripple that hand for life by breaking every bone in it, so there was no reason not to take full advantage while it still worked. Also, Shepard seemed to need something to jolt him out of his daze.
Yeah, sure, maintenance logs, he said, plastering a grin that was belied by his neutral tone.
They're in the pocket on the door, Steve said uncertainly. He was backing away, as was evidenced by the soft thud his head made when it connected to the wing support. He cursed under his breath. Rodney withdrew his hand, having memorized as much of the sensation of firm muscle beneath his palm as he could with fabric, and oh yeah, the promise of impending death between them. His body would never be recovered, he knew. All John had to do was climb to 4,000 meters and open the door somewhere over the wilderness. Scavengers would pick his skeleton clean after the bears were finished with him. Maybe, if Rodney begged for mercy, John would make sure he was dead before throwing him out the plane. Otherwise, taking 9.81 meters per second as the... Okay, that might need to be tweaked a tiny bit because acceleration weakened the further one was from the surface of the planet. Then, supposing a terminal velocity of 200 kilometers per hour, and figuring the air resistance, yeah, he would definitely have enough time for a full-blown panic attack before he hit the ground.
Rodney?
John was talking. Oh God, how long had he been talking? If you aren't going to get out of my way, the least you can do is hand me all those important logbooks. Right, he was standing between John and the open door. Spinning, he discovered a bundle of papers in the door pocket, a bigger mess than the contents of his glove box, easily. He grabbed them all and dumped them on John's lap. Sorry. For everything. His eyes pleaded.
Thanks. The word was a clear dismissal, and John had begun sorting through the pile with no mention of forgiveness. It was Steve who inadvertently came to his rescue. The flight plan's in the office. I'll grab it for you.
I'll go with you!
Rodney scurried after him, and still had to scurry even after he'd caught up just outside the hangar. The damn man had stilts for legs and a stride to match. Their awkward silence lasted as far as the tower. Steve broke first.
He punched Rodney in the shoulder so hard, Rodney yelped and rebounded off a nearby wall. But it must have been some kind of brutal compliment, because Steve was beaming at him. "Dr. McKay, you dog, you! Sorry about back there. I didn't know you two were..." He made a complicated gesture that might have been the shadow hand puppet representation of mutual blowjobs. "Don't worry about it," Rodney said weakly. "Can't fault the guy for trying." "I suppose not. John is..." Too many adjectives to narrow down to just one. "Quite the catch," he finished with a sigh. Sheepish, Steve ducked behind his bangs, which was preposterous given that they were always in his eyes anyway. "Say, if you two are ever interested in..." "Absolutely not." "But you don't even know what I'm going to." "I can guess. Answer's still no. Now, go." He shooed Steve further into the office. "Get the thing. Chop, chop. Daylight's wasting." Steve hunted behind a desk, eventually turning up a list of coordinates penciled on the back of some junk mail. "Found it." He handed the already wrinkled paper to Rodney. "The plane's got GPS, but I wrote directions too. You know, in case John wants to do it the old-fashioned way." "I'm sure he will," Rodney muttered, distracted. "He does prefer to be difficult whenever possible. Is this a 9 or a 4?
7,
Steve pointed. "That's a 9. Rodney made corrections above the indecipherable scrawl. "Yeah, 'cause that could only be the difference between reaching our destination and getting lost over the Pacific." "I really appreciate you guys doing this for me. I forgot all about the delivery when I made that doctor's appointment up in the big town. It's kind of important, and it's not like I can be in two places at once." Doctor's appointment. Big town. That meant a specialist of some kind. Right. Rodney was suddenly, absurdly grateful that he'd never slept with Steve. "Don't thank me. Thank John. He's the one who agreed to help with this little favor. I mean, it wasn't like we had anything else planned for the day. Besides, lounging in bed." Fully clothed, playing video games. But Steve sure as hell didn't need to know that. "Sorry," he winced. Rodney squinted at the directions again. "Where in the hell are we going, anyway? It's a milk run, right?" There were hundreds of freaks who chose to live in areas so remote they were accessible only by air. Steve had regulars he made supply runs for when he wasn't toting tourists or carting mail. "One stop, nice and easy. I'd do it later, but the truck came in today, and it's stuff that will spoil if it doesn't get delivered fast."
"You could try refrigerating it," Rodney suggested. It was almost cool enough these days to leave perishables outside. Another month and it wouldn't have been a concern. Another month after that, and you couldn't leave anything outside overnight. You didn't want to freeze solid.
"Don't have a fridge that big," Steve said. Surprisingly firm logic coming from him. "Anyway, it worked out great. John's a great pilot. Really great. He'll treat her right." Steve had no problem at all limiting Shepard to one adjective. Figured.
"Yes, so he says. But you've never seen him fly. For that matter, neither had Rodney. Oh, sure, he'd flown the chopper up, but that might have been a fluke. Maybe the best and the brightest was military slang for the unbalanced and the suicidal. Who else would be crazy enough to pilot ancient alien technology?" Steve just gaped at Rodney like he blasphemed the god of aviation.
"Right, forget I mentioned it. I suppose we better be getting back to the
hangar.
Shepherd.
Impending doom.
Whatever. If only there was some escape from the whole rotten trip
that didn't involve beating the consciousness out of Shepard with a wrench. Rodney was pretty sure John would see that coming and fight back. Unless... Hey, wait! He beckoned Steve back from the door.
Huh?
You don't happen to know how to hotwire a car, do you?